time, tide, and Trump, the surface shifted and the sands have moved again in the GOP presidential election, with the sky now darkening over Ted Cruz. Greenish clouds begin to swirl overhead as he stares upwards into the vortex of annihilation. Donald Trump is currently at 996 delegates, essentially 1,000. He needs, by direct vote or by hook and crook, another 241, bearing in mind that Trump should get 100 delegates from California. And consider that the winner-take-all Indiana is leaning towards Donald with legendary Hoosier coach Bobby Knight's blessings. He might only need another 100. This is game, set, match territory. And just a little news flash to add in here, New York Times says he no longer needs Indiana to make it. The insufferable Cruz, for his part, has misplayed a bad hand, making repeated, crucial, last-minute mistakes where leaders and winners are chosen or rejected. For example, he signed pacts with demons to rep the GOP, and he also lay with Kasich. And what did he get for the selling of his soul? What jewel of respect from the grand old party did he harvest from such a basement? He was just described as Lucifer in the flesh by former House Leader John Boehner. That's quite a thank you. And Cruz then chooses the, well, I don't want to say what I have written here, but one delegate, Carly Peppermint Patty Fiorina, as his running mate, vice president. What a laughingstock. Meanwhile, innumerable articles attempting to plumb why Cruz is so universally despised by his colleagues are out there. Hint, it's because he's a blankety blank blank. So Trump has essentially sewn this puppy up with a last-minute surge, as if he doesn't quite poll to 1237, he can still pick up what he needs from the several hundred free-range delegates. So it's bye-bye time for the hated Cruz and inept and self-worshipful Kasich. Next comes Trump pivoting to swillery swineherd Clinton, who universally comports herself as the chosen one, as the obvious winner. That is when she's not dodging the FBI. And the real puzzler is how Trump is already tied with Hillo Beans at 38% when he has yet to aim both phasers at her lock and load. Locally, we see the continued disintegration of comedy and civility and peacefulness between the sheriff's office and the group of the golden earring Garrett. For the latest hijinks, Garrett and his hapless hand puppet Wayne Hancock hired an analyst flunky to cook the books on a $48,000 study. Of course, the real howler was delivered by Dr. Weiss, which turned out to be six atrocious pages of cut and paste cannibalized from another study. Heavens to Murgatroyd. Advantage Kiki on that one. And now on to Open Topic Friday, sports fans. Well, good morning to you. Hope you're doing well. 6:10, and there's so many things that are going on right now. I was planning on doing a kind of a faith and science show, but I will next week sometime. But first, this is to the golden earring and the hand puppet, Hancock. Hold on a second here. Got some bleed over. Here we go. All right, so we got double bleed over. All right, I got all these windows open. Ultimately, why things crash, friends. Too many windows open, too little time. But this is for the beloved hand puppet, Hancock. And Golden Earring, his mentor. All right, I can't even pull this one off. So it is outside for you right now, 51 degrees, looks like a pretty nice day. And ran into so much information. The big thing that I ran into last night was that Trump no longer needs Indiana, which is a real shocker because that is where Ted Cruz chose to build his Crusader castle for the last mighty battle. And he believes that he is going to take Trump down there. It's not going to happen. He's got 1,000 delegates now. Everything is turning in his direction. It's pretty fascinating, to be honest. And there's just no escaping the Trump candidacy, I don't think. It doesn't look to me like that Trump, that Cruz is really, as I was saying in my opening, he's really misplayed his hand. I mean, coming together with the GOP and standing for them, trying to get in bed with Kasich, and then it's funny, but Ted has always got his own spin on reality, but he decided that he was going to have this thing with Kasich in which they would choose their own states to focus on and not be in each other's way. So it was what Trump called collusion. And so Ted Cruz, because of the kind of person he is, just stood up and said, this is not a collusion of any kind. This is just he's going that way and I'm going this way. But you know, Ted Cruz is just not persuasive. He's lacking some essential ability. There were at least 6 articles that I saw on the issue of why people hate Cruz's guts. And they say that it's ever since he's been a little kid, people have disliked him. Very few friends in his life. And they said that it's just that in his mind, he's fighting against, the powers that be or whatever. But here's the thing, and I was trying to think about this. Ted Cruz is a very religious person. He's much, much more religious than you realize, because his father is not only a pastor, but he's a dominionist, meaning that they want to put their faith in every nook and cranny. In addition to that, though, his father convinced Ted Cruz that he was anointed. He was chosen from a very, very young age. So here's my question for all you Cruz lovers out there. And yes, he does have his positive points, but if Ted Cruz misses his, this opportunity here, and Trump, he's 69, 70, whatever he is, he could do 2 terms. I think he's in pretty good shape. If Trump wins and does 2 terms, Ted Cruz is not going to be too old. He'd be in his 50s at that point, I think. But does the party give him another chance? Because he's gone all the way through this primary season and hasn't really picked up a lot of support. And the amazing thing is that John Boehner, even after they get up and he goes along with what the party wants, turns around and says that he is Satan in the flesh, which is really an extraordinary thing to hear about somebody. And it just goes to show you that if John Boehner, I think, is a pretty easygoing guy, you may not agree with his politics. I certainly did not. But, he seemed like he got along with people. And for him to say that he absolutely basically hated the guts and saw Cruz is not as heaven sent, but as a satanic figure, that's not good. So my question is, the question I'm getting around, and here's a story on it this morning. I didn't see this last night when I went to bed. Rafael Cruz damns Donald, only Cruz is following the word of God. Well, that's the theory of America's Prophet, which is Glenn Beck. Wow, there's so many twists and turns. There is so many amazing twists and turns in this race. I'm stunned. 53-14-50. I'm looking for a clip. I've got a clip. I've got too many clips to really find the one with Boner on it, but I will find it for you. We do have a call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Good morning, Kelly. Top of the morning. This is Greg.
Big, what's up?
Hey, before you fade out in the sunrise, yeah, you're right. You know what? Anybody that gets in bed with Mormonism and Glenn Beck, I totally reject. And for Rafael Cruz to say that, you are correct about them being dimensed. Amillennialists, they want to establish the kingdom of God and turn around and hand the keys to Jesus Christ,
yeah.
Which ain't going to happen. Well, because scripture tells us that the next big catastrophic event will be the great snatching away. And then the 7 years of tribulation, that's rightly dividing the word of truth. 2 Timothy 2:15.
Is there anything about the Dona Annie County Commission in the last days report?
Well, men would wax evil and wax worse and worse. That's the first thing I can think of.
Oh, my gosh.
I will continue to listen to you as you fade off into the sunrise.
Okay. How romantic. Thank you.
Kelly.
All right. Bye-bye. All right, so here's what I would say to Kathy or to Frankie or any person who's a critic of anybody who's a critic of religion, that there's this fallacy out there. A fallacy is a mistake in thinking. Fallacy called now of course I forget it, but it's something like, well, anyway, when I think of it, I'll come back and give it to you. But what the idea stands for is that you're invincible ignorance. You're protected by, if you're ignorant on something, you're protected by that. So, which is, sounds like a dumb idea, and it is a dumb idea, but the reason that you study religion isn't so that you can, I mean, if you want to be a super Christian or a super Muslim or whatever, you got to study religion, right? But I think one of the reasons that you study religion is it's so powerfully influential in world history and up to the current day. There is no subject, there is no force that's more influential than. And we're going to break here. I accidentally hit the button for the ad, but we'll be right back. 6:19 Kelly O'Connell Show. All right, so we've got so many things to cover today. I'm just hitting the wrong buttons there, but I do want to get as much as I can in here. All right, so my stories is, as far as I can tell, and I really think this, and I don't think I've said this before, I think Trump's got it. I think he's got it because he's at 996, according to the last, I found a really fantastic page. There's 578 still available. All right. If he's at 1,000, that means there are 996. That means he needs 241. All right. So he doesn't even need half of what's left. He needs something like 40%. Well, he was, you know, at the recent elections was at something like 59%. Now he won't do that one. Montana, Oregon, and stuff, but not the point. In the states where he needs to do well, which is California. California is winner takes all by county or by district, by basically by voter district. So he should be able to get 100 votes out of that. If he gets 100 votes out, that leaves, or 100 delegates at least, leaves him with 1,100. Now, a member of the GOP Rules Committee has said, and the Rules Committee is the ones who decide what the rules mean. They draft the rules and they say what they mean at the convention or before the convention. and during the convention. So if he gets to 1,100 there, let's just say he's ahead in Indiana. He just got Bobby Knight's nomination or his endorsement. They've got 57 in Indiana. If he gets 57, then that's 1,157. Then he needs like 80. But it doesn't get Indiana. He's still got a shot to it because there's so many delegates left. Plus, don't forget, there are hundreds and hundreds of delegates that are uncommitted, and they just need to be brought in. And, you know, this backroom game that Cruz has been playing, he has been going and wooing these delegates in these kind of voterless situations. Now, he didn't bet in Pennsylvania. Almost all of the unbound delegates in Pennsylvania came over to Trump. So that's why he's doing so well. And I don't think that I'm looking at some of these clips here. Cruz does not have another, as far as I can tell, another ace up his sleeve in his back pocket. But so this is what I was, I accidentally hit that ad button and the ads kicked off. But this is what I wanted to say to you. Study religion because it explains in some way the rise and fall of great empires. It explains the motivations of individuals. It explains what people believe. But it also explains in particular what the beliefs are of Ted Cruz's dad. And obviously Ted Cruz's dad is somebody that has had the biggest influence on his son. He's who's a dominionist, and Ted Cruz is a dominionist. His dad has also put this anointing on his son. Now, he's come very close to being elected president in terms of the law of averages and just pure chance. So, but the dad is saying there's only one person who's following the rule of God or the word of God. So, but all of these things, you know, they have background. You can't just immediately introduce yourself to these topics and know about them. You got to spend some time studying them and everything. So this idea that your life is going to be blessed because you ostentatiously avoid religion, like Frankie does, and like I think Kathy does. People like that, I don't see it as a blessing. You know, I think it's a huge mistake, because the more that you can do to understand other people in history, you know, the more powerful your mind is. All right, here's that clip I was trying to play for so long.
Heavens to Murgatroyd.
All right, of course, that's Snackpuss. All right, so I'm just trying to see which. All right, gosh, I've got so many clips here. Let's take a little break here, and I'll reload. And all right, okay, so, well, all right, I want you to hear. All right, first off, we're going to listen to, here's a little bit of Glenn Beck making one of his innumerable crazy and prophetic statements. Here's a reason to study another reason to study religion. What does Beck believe? What does the average American religious person believe? Is there any common ground? If not, then who is Beck praying to? Who is he prophesying for? But here's a little bit of Beck in the morning for you, if you can stomach it. I know there's a lot of Beck fans out there, but here we go.
He went far enough yesterday, and apparently I'll get into this here in just a second. And was it a desperate move? Well, I would say yes, because Ted Cruz and Carly Fiorina are desperate to save the Constitution. So am I. They are desperate to save the economy. Desperate to create jobs, and so am I. They are desperate to stop the crucifixion of Christians by ISIS, and so am I. I think you are too. I think you're desperate on all of those things. I think you're desperate to make sure that your children have a brighter future than they do today, and you've lost hope on that, and so have I. They are desperate to make sure that is reversed.
All right. So Glenn Beck said, and if you listened into the show yesterday, you heard him say that to save freedom for mankind, you've got to vote for Cruz. Now, let me ask you this. Cruz's dad, Glenn Beck, and all these different people. If Cruz doesn't become president, does that mean God didn't call him? I asked these questions yesterday. Or does it mean he screwed it up? For example, he was not supposed to choose Carly, or is this God's punishment on America? Now, you know, just because you get up and say God called me to do something, that in and of itself not proof, right? So the measure of a prophet in the Old Testament, New Testament, is if you prophesy, if the thing comes true, you're of God. If you, the things that you say, well, let's turn that around. The measure is that if you prophesy and it doesn't come true, then you're definitely not from God. But the other way would be true as well. I would reckon that if all your prophecies come true, you're either tied into God or you're one heck of a Lucifer in the flesh. But anyway, our continuing salute here to the county commission and their novel way of getting free cars into the hands of the upper level civil servants. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450 to call, and we'll be right back.
Little GTO, you're ready to get high. Three deuces and a 4C and a 389. Listen to her attacking up now. Listen to her whine. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right, so I do have the clip. You're going to have to listen carefully. John Boehner was at Stanford University, I believe, and was asked a question what he thought of Cruz, Ted Cruz. Now, bear in mind, Cruz has just been the guy fighting to save the GOP, fighting to save. He's the guy from the inside. He may... whatever his deal is, he's a standing senator, sitting senator, whatever you want to call him. The GOP came to him apparently and said, "Would you help us, save us from Donald?" And so here, but this is just a few days ago, and this is what John Boehner thinks of him yesterday.
How about saying your opinion of some of the other people looking
to
the
highest
office? How about
by the way, there is one expletive in here, so but it's not too bad. But one bad word, but it's part of this audio that was taken live from John Boehner responding to Ted Cruz, what he thought of him. So that's his statements, is that Cruz is Lucifer. Now, I'm trying to think about like characters in the Bible who were called by God, religious figures in history. I guess Savonarola comes to mind. This guy that was, he's an Italian, a monk, And he was at, what's the place with all the canals and everything? I think the Italian society was in terrible shape, and he went in and started kind of, he was a reformer, and he ended up getting killed. I'm trying to think of people in history who, in the Bible or whatever, who were called by God, but were also extremely rude and made as many, many enemies as possible. I mean, I think, you know, if you're in politics, politics is the art of interacting with others. I think that's Aristotle's statement. You need people's goodwill at some point, unless you're planning on being a dictator. So the fact that Ted Cruz apparently gloats and glories in the fact that he offends people, I find extraordinary. But, you know, he's obviously got some idea. But so let me ask you, do you think, is he called by God, and did God call him? Was he supposed to be raised as some sort of, you know, extremely rude, antagonistic person to achieve God's will? That would seem to be the implication from his personality and his drive. I think that you need people's goodwill to, you know, to, you're trying to run a government by consensus. You need people's people to like you. So here's a little clip, Megyn Kelly and Cruz on this issue of whether he could unite the party.
Donald Trump and Hillary are both,
you mentioned that,
pretending to be something they're
not. I'm trying to ask you about something that is concerning to your supporters. Your supporters, who understand how important Indiana is to your campaign.
Yeah.
But the polls are showing that people, some 65% of Republicans, even people who support Ted Cruz, believe the person who enters the convention with the most delegates and the most votes should likely emerge as the nominee, even if it takes, you know, even if he doesn't have a majority. And right now, as I mentioned, he's got 400 more delegates than you do. He's got 3.2 million more votes in the popular vote than you do. He won 27 states. You won 11. So given that, how could you possibly unite this party coming out of a contested convention?
Well, let me answer it a couple of ways. Number one, nobody is going to get to 1237. Donald's not going to get there. I'm not going to get there. Donald can't get there. It's why he's so desperately trying to convince everyone the race is over, because he knows
he
shifted
really
from the
California.
East Coast, but he's not going to. He is not going to, and he's not going to get to 1237. And even when folks try to, like, do all sorts of math, he falls short. And we're going to a contested convention. And listen, the poll you cited, listen, of course people say yes to that poll. If you call someone up and says, should the person who votes win? Anyone goes, duh, yeah. Mm-hmm. How about asking the question that is really the relevant question? Should you have to earn a majority to be the nominee?
No,
I guarantee you 60-70% will say yes to that as well. I mean, that's a poll question that's rigged. The Trumpsters push it out there because it suggests, I mean, if you ask anyone, should the person with the most votes win? Of course. But his argument is he should be the nominee even though he can't win a majority. And let me tell you, we are headed to Cleveland. There will be a contested convention. Donald Trump won't get to 1237. And when that happens, the highest vote total Trump ever has will be the first vote total. He will go steadily down. And I believe what we're seeing is the Republican Party uniting. And, Megan, that's one of the reasons people are so excited with my naming Carly as my VP, mm-hmm. because Carly has an incredible ability to unify and bring this party together. It's why 5 of the 17 Republican candidates who started have endorsed my campaign, including Carly, including Scott Walker and Jeb Bush and Lindsey Rick Perry. We're uniting the party, and we've got to stand for something.
How can you say that? Because the critics say—
All right, so I don't, once again, I don't see what it is that Carly Fiorina brings to the thing. Why is Carly Fiorina suddenly the healer of America? Why does Ted Cruz cite to her as the person who can bring everybody together? I guess he knows that he can't bring people together. Here's another possibility. Maybe he looks at Jeremiah, this prophet in the Old Testament, who would go out and call down condemnation on the Israelites. But I mean, you know, he's doing it. He's got God sending him out there. But maybe Cruz and his dad thinks that he is sent out to call down condemnation. I think they call it imprecation, call down curses on, I don't know. It's a democratic system. It's Congress. It's, you know, what does Congress mean? It means interaction. It means problem with the idea that God called me to be a leader and I don't have to be polite to you. I've got a real problem with that. 643 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523 1450. And we'll be back. And I do have some weather for you to break up the monotony of politics. We'll be right back. And a big shout out to Julia Brown. Watch your keys around her, kids. All right, so I'm having a little trouble as you getting into the weather. I don't know what it is about weather.com, but they have very, very short clips, and at this point, it's probably to a certain extent, no shock here. It's a certain extent the computer that I'm on probably needs an upgrade. But you know, it's funny. There is this storm that's coming into. Give you a verbal explanation, a storm coming into Colorado and New Mexico and such, bringing in snow. And I know it's late in the season and everything, but you know, this, I don't think we've ever seen anything in our lifetime like this weather that we're getting. I've got the page is kind of slowly loading itself, but in the meantime, why don't I play this unbelievable. Let me see how much time I have left here. Well, all right. So there's this fight, and this guy that you hear, who somebody said sounded like a little biatch, this guy, his name is Steve Deese, and he is a talk show host up in Colorado, and he's a proxy. You know, a proxy means somebody, a stand-in. He's a proxy for Trump. For proxy for Cruz, that'll be obvious, but the back and forth is unbelievable here. This is this savage dogfight going on.
You agree?
And oops, it looks like okay. Our weather video is loading here. Storm Central. Here we go.
If you live in Denver, Winter Storm Celine, a couple of weeks ago, it really just kind of took down the transportation for a good chunk of the day. Now we're starting to get closer to summer, though, right? I mean, we don't have to deal with this stuff anymore. Oh, wait. From Denver on Thursday. Yeah, I guess you guys can get this stuff this time of year. These guys have a draft day tradition of playing golf. They were not going to let snow get in the way. All right, let's talk about the forecast, because it's getting kind of interesting for Denver, as it usually is. You guys are always right on the edge of either the worst of it or nothing at all. And that's kind of the case here. But you can see we're already getting snow, especially in the high terrain west and south of town. But notice into Friday what starts to happen. Latest model guidance is starting to paint in a pretty decent swath of snow around Denver. So
That could mean that Denver gets a pretty decent amount of snow. Let's see the latest snowfall forecast that we have. Now, in Denver proper, downtown, doesn't look like there's going to be a huge amount, at least right now. That changed. But certainly south of town, we're talking 8 to 12, some of the highest terrain.
Up in Wyoming, they're looking at 12 inches. So it's a fairly substantial storm. And there's a bunch of flooding that is down on the coast, on the Gulf Coast, that was a little bit surprising as well. And I mean, they had to shut. They were in Biloxi, they had thigh deep water and had to shut down the schools and everything. But it is just one storm after another that is pounding in these places. And while I'm waiting for this other clip to load, let's listen to this crazy, this savage debate defending Cruz's versus Trump. And this is off of CNN.
I mean, Cruz is your guy. Do you think how he's pivoting and turning into a positive? Well, all right, if you want to be a Washington insider in with Reid and Pelosi and Boehner and Trump, that's your guy. But I'm Cruz, and I'm, you know, I'm from the outside. Is that the plan for him?
Brooke, if Team Cruz does not have a crying Boehner endorsement on the air somewhere in Indiana by the end of business today, I don't want to live in this world anymore, Brooke. This is a gift from God, this endorsement. Between yesterday, we got the endorsement of Planned Parenthood with the Fiorina and Cruz ticket. Today, the establishment comes out and says, yeah, all right, we're going to keep it real here, Indiana. Here's the guy we really hate, Ted Cruz. And here he helped put all of us into office and gave us huge donations, Donald Trump. So this is the kind of branding you are looking for. These are the droids you're looking for right here, Brooke. This is what
Kaylee,
you want right here.
He says it's a gift from God. You agree?
No, not at all, Steve, because here's the thing. This is not about endorsements. I look to actions. And when I look at actions, what I see is Donald Trump stood up for the people of Colorado to have a vote. Donald Trump tried to enfranchise people, give them a greater voice. In contrast to Ted Cruz, who willingly stood against the people of Colorado, who willingly has been playing this delegate game to try to take the people's will out of the equation. That's what the Washington establishment does. They throw out the popular vote, they throw out the will of the people, and they put their own personal aspirations first. That's what Ted Cruz has been doing the last few weeks. That's why he is
losing. I'd like to respond to that.
Please do.
I'd like to respond to that. Kaylee, I don't know you. Seriously, do you have any integrity at all? I just have to know.
Ouch.
I mean, is it
Come
that
now,
important
Steve.
To be on national television? You Let's darn well know 65,000 people. I am keeping it professional. She's the one lying. 65,000 people voted in Colorado at this thing called a caucus, called an election. There has been no voterless elections. Every delegate has been elected, including the delegates unbound that Donald Trump got in Pennsylvania the other night. This is the biggest lie and the biggest scam from a guy that's lied repeatedly throughout this entire campaign, whose campaign is built on a lie. I'm Mr. Anti-Establishment. When I wrote all these ice checks, yesterday, Mr. Trump was defending Ditch McConnell. Today, he's taking hosannas from John Boehner. This whole thing is a scam. And there
Steve,
are millions of Americans that watch people like you sit here and go on these shows, and Scotty Hughes and the rest of the, you know, this cabal of motley crew of advisors who just sit here and fed this guy and lie about him and for him every single day. And millions of Americans are freaking just sick of it. Stop lying. There wasn't a voterless election in Colorado. You're lying.
Wow. Hang on a second. No one comes on my show and calls anyone a liar, with all due respect. The deal in Colorado is, yes, you are correct. People vote. I had somebody on who wanted to become a delegate.
If I'm correct, she lied.
To become a delegate.
If I'm correct, she lied,
but
Brooke.
It's not
Why
a,
is that
oh.
bad?
Steve.
I'm correct. She lied.
This guy, I think they had to change his diaper after the show. But anyway, that's a Ted Cruz supporter there. 6:52, we'll take a little break here and come back and finish up on the first hour. So many stories out there. Amazing. Be right back. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. Saluting Dona Ana County's new car program. Your boss can take your car anytime. Here's your story. Here's your story from Biloxi.
They went first till 9.
Biloxi.
Started getting really bad around 9. So They said, you went in school, don't come. The water was mid-thigh, I want to say, outside. And then it was coming inside into the hallway. Probably about 300, I want to say, like around there. Maybe more made it into school and were sent home about 30 minutes later. They had tables blocked, crying. They had tables laying on their sides, trying to block off the entrances to see if the water wouldn't come into the building. But it was like they were joking about it, but you could tell some of the kids were actually worried about how flooded it was.
That's Biloxi, Mississippi. If you pardon the abrupt start of that, but if I try to stop these things and replay them, then the program kind of shuts down. But I'm looking through these pictures of Biloxi, and there is thigh high water. There's pickup trucks that where the water is up to the light to the lights. Just a lot of water. So, I mean, I think we're going to look back at this time in the weather that we've gone through and just be really amazed. Now, there's a lot of people out there, including one of my sisters, probably both of my sisters, if the truth be known, but one of them's a little bit more circumspect about, you know, kind of giving me these propaganda blasts. But one of my sisters, just no matter what happens in the weather, well, I guess they can't, I guess that'll teach those anti-global warming people now, won't it? And I'm like, well, you know, not everybody believes in global warming. Don't you believe in science? Yeah, I didn't know global warming was science. But so anyway, we're going to look back at this time and really be amazed. Just the amount of water that has come through, and I'm looking at another clip here right now, and I won't have time to get it on the way the Weather Channel loads so slowly. There's another, it says timing damaging storm threat, target flood plague south. But anyway, it isn't yet another storm that's coming through Texas and up into Oklahoma and over into Louisiana and everything. But we've just had storm after storm after storm, and they've absolutely shattered the records long ago, months ago in Texas for the amount of rain in a 12-month span. So. All right, so I was looking at in the first hour this kind of somebody just texted me, and what is this new car program you talk of? There is this story about Julia Brown, who's the county manager, that she borrowed a car from Jess Williams. This has been confirmed. She borrowed the car. Now Jess says he loaned it to her. I take his word on it. But there's a lot of swirling reports out there, and I think even Kiki was able to say there's a lot of claims out there that she took his car to the point where and wouldn't give it back to the point where he had to put her on his insurance, and then it brings up a couple of issues. If she took it without permission, that's crazy. She took it with permission, it's still improper because she's his boss. So that's the joke about the cars. Anyway, we'll take a break here. 6:59 a.m. Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450 to call in. And there are some people that are furious about me joking about it. But what the heck. 6:59, we'll be right back.
Gonna save all my money.
Okay, so 706, and we were talking last hour to a certain extent about this phenomenon with Cruz and everything and Trump. And I think that I'm calling the race for Trump now because I see that he's got more, that we're running down to the end of the race, and we're seeing that there's more than one way forward for him. There is the way where he wins Indiana, where he's ahead right now, winner take all. That's 57 votes. He's at 1,000 right now. I think he gets at least 100 votes or delegates. I'm calling these votes, they're actually delegates. He gets at least 100 out of California, most populous state, has, I believe, 176 delegates. So I don't think it's a stretch to say that he gets 100 delegates from there. Don't forget, in the last five races, you know how many counties Ted Cruz won? Zero. So he's not real strong right now, and he's fighting back. He chose Carly Fiorina as his vice president, which is completely baffling to me, other than the uptick from having a female presidential candidate, which has been done already. If he wins, it would be different. But Carly Fiorina, I don't see the value. I mean, I don't see the value. She's very doctrinaire. She's very, you know, a lot of these people that run have a sense of authority. She has a sense of kind of holier than thou, which is not authority in my book. But here we do have a phone call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
I got to tell you, Kelly, John Boehner, a.k.a. Boehner, nailed it.
Yeah.
When he called Cruz a Lucifer in the flesh.
Yes.
And then his other comments. No, but more importantly than just that alone, the representational of Cruz in himself and his ideology and thought process is what happens, the danger, the deleterious, damaging effect of religion on uneducated people.
He's from Princeton. He's from Harvard. What are you talking about, uneducated?
Well, okay, you can have some book learning, but you don't have any common sense. Maybe I've rephrased, I didn't phrase it properly, you know, but his mentality is screwy, you know, where he's got that much influence, or susceptible to that much religious influence, which causes him to go out there and say these outrageous, insane things that cause average thinking people to look at him and believe that he is in fact Lucifer in the flesh. And John Boehner is a very religious guy, by the way.
He's
you
Catholic.
Saw him cry when the Pope was here.
Yeah, well, Ayatollah is very religious too. I mean, that in and of itself doesn't mean anything. But I take up your point. So I mean, but it's not a compliment if you're a religious person and you're trying to have a religious movement, and people say you don't remind me of Christ, you remind me of Satan.
Exactamente. You're not getting anywhere on that one. And maybe even though, you know, I'm atheist, maybe in some screwball way there is a God out there that is sticking his finger into Doug Cruz's thinking and causing it to reverse itself. It's just opposite of what you said. You know, instead of, you know, bringing in the flock, yeah, it's rejecting the flock. Who knows? Maybe there is something to be said about that, right?
Well, it's all right. So you're an agnostic. You're not an atheist. But all right. So here's the thing: America was started at some level as a kind of religious experiment. They wanted to get away from this control of the Church of England and this total domination of England over a religion. And so they came here to have freedom and everything. So there's nothing wrong with having a religious experiment, but I do take you up on this, that it is scary if someone is coming in with on a religious mission and people don't even really know what it means.
I agree with you 100% on that. I'm totally in favor of religion out of politics completely. It must be secular. Politics or the government of the United States of America must be secular. You cannot have any kind of religious influence whatsoever. You want to have religion, you keep it in church or keep it in your own private house or whatever.
Frankie,
but you got to keep it out of religion.
Frankie, this is kind of
out of politics.
This is kind of a continuation of last week's argument. Here's the thing. If you completely If you completely make the political process it's like the boy in the plastic bubble. There can't be any germs in there. Religion is a germ. You can't let it contaminate it. How do you explain the vast number of ideas and theories that we've developed that have come out either directly or indirectly out of the church that helped create the modern world? I mean, you want to, after the fact, then separate religion from politics. It seems like totally quixotic, totally unrealistic and not wanted. I mean, when you separate religion from politics, you end up with Russia and China.
No, I disagree with you. I mean, first off, you're not going to know that until you have a pure intellectual, logical, honorable society where you would have the absence of religion. Nobody's ever tried that.
Yeah, yeah. Wait a second. The USSR, they did it. They made religion illegal. China, they did it. They made it illegal. And whether you want to say there is any connection between that and the incredible number of mass killings in those states, it has been tried.
Been tried because you got a totalitarian system forcing it. Now, I'm not saying that the United States would force somebody. I'm saying that it would be an agreeance, a democratic agreeance that you would remove religion from government and then just keep it there in the population. Just go to church, whatever you want, but you're not going to have any influence about what decision is made in the government relative to religion.
We're already doing what you want, aren't we?
No. How so? They're using religion. Let's take the Planned Parenthood or abortion stuff. They're using religion to go against the thought process of an individual or groups
all
of
right,
individuals
okay.
that want to control
all right,
their
all right,
own
all right.
body.
That's
religion doing
that. Let me respond to you. This idea of constitutionalism and the Bill of Rights, this natural law, natural rights, and all this rights that we came up with, this, it comes out of combining Christianity at some basic level with government. The constitutionalism is a theory, one person, one vote, but it's also what they call popular sovereignty. That comes out of this debate in church history. This is the interesting thing, Frank, and this is why I don't think you can just completely write off religion and its influence on history. The church theologians, but the church itself, Protestant and Catholic, over the years came up with certain doctrines. They tried them in church and they're successful for years, for decades, or even centuries. At some point they say they either said it or it just was a natural evolution to put these things into practice in the society. That's why I'm saying this idea that you have, the separation of church and state, historically we'd be living in Africa or the Middle East or something if we hadn't allowed these transitions.
Okay, I'm glad you used that word transition, because I think it's time now for transition.
But why?
Humanity grows. Yeah. Humanity grows. They make mistakes. They learn from their mistakes. Now, maybe religion, 500, 1,000, whatever number of years, they may be in a little bit of clothing today. Oh, by the way, on a side note, there are many, many more people that are moving away from religion. Those statistics are out there that they're moving away from religion, because what happens, and I've said this once before, the more intelligent you become, the less likely that you're going to be believing in this flying
spaghetti monster
stuff. That's not true.
That is not true. I mean, I just read this article the other day that I think you were reacting to, when the smug, the sense that's come out of liberalism in the last decade or two is this tremendous smugness. And the guy says in there, we've got studies that say on average, the Republicans are higher IQ and better educated than the liberals. But I mean, we're not going to solve the question there. Here's what I'm going to throw this out to you. Dostoevsky is famous. Dostoevsky is the guy that wrote Crime and Punishment. He's famous for standing for the proposition that if there is no God, anything is possible. I mean, if there is no God, there are no rules. There are no set rules. Well, what's your response to that? Where do we get our rules from?
Well, obviously, it's a learning process. We came out of the slime with the rest of every other species and rose to the top of the heap. You had to have some kind of yardstick to go by. I mean, we could go on about this in a very detailed way, you know, going at the beginnings
I don't
of religion
mind.
And why
I don't
why,
mind.
Why of
I don't,
all the species in the planet,
yeah, but
only humans are going to go believe in
Frankie,
some flying spaghetti monster.
Frankie, hold on a second. If you think that you have footage from the original religious movement, I mean, you go back a certain point in history, we don't have any records.
You can extrapolate. Well,
all right. Where did it come from?
That word
where did,
very, very well.
All right. Where did,
that's a great word.
Congratulations on using extrapolate. Now, tell us where religion came from.
That came from the internal thought processes of very uneducated, scared of things that go bump in the night humans. Come on, Kelly. All you got to know, look at the Indians on the plains. And I'm not knocking just Indians. I'm stereotypically. You know, they had the wind god, the earth god, the lightning god, the wind,
they were
whatever
pagan.
Kind of god. Because they didn't understand where that stuff came from until later on.
Okay,
so
agreed.
So what did they do? They manufactured it on. That's what humans do. When they're scared of something and they can't realize what it's about, they manufacture
right.
It must
I,
be some kind
enough.
Of god because they can't.
Frankie,
they don't
agreed.
Have any.
Agreed. In the history of mankind, most gods were manufactured, and you can see that in Rome, where they had every particular important thing, you know, farming, and you know, metallurgy, and all these different areas, the rivers and everything. Everything had a god. We see that
yeah.
all throughout the pagan world.
That's right.
But
there you go. I rest my case. So what happened? You know, they couldn't take this, meaning the organizers of religion, or those that wanted to have a centralized organ, they had to do something
right,
about
Frankie.
To get rid of all these other gods. So what did they
Frankie.
Do? They manufactured this
hold on.
This god Moses fella, and then
hold
they
on.
Come up
hold
with
on.
This Jesus
hold
guy
on.
Out
Frankie,
of Jerusalem.
Frankie, just get gird your loins, they say in the Bible.
What's that?
Gird your loins. You know, hold on a second. This idea that you're putting out there is famous. It's related to Joseph Campbell, that first we had paganism, and then paganism grows up, multiple gods, polytheism. It grows up, and then at some point it turns into monotheism. Monotheism, the monotheism of the Jews and the Christians and the Muslims. I'm not aware of any substantive historical research that has proved that, and there's a lot of people out there that believe it's the other way around. First was monotheism, and then it degenerates into polytheism. But this idea that natural evolution of religion, I don't see it. But let's can you stay on the line? I'll take a break, and we'll come back. We'll reload.
Well, you know, let's give somebody else maybe a chance to chime in.
If anybody, Frankie,
because I don't want to repeat myself.
Frankie, it's all right. We're used to you repeating yourself.
That's not nice to say.
It's a cheap shot, but let me put you on hold. We'll take a
okay.
break. If anybody else wants to come in, they're more than welcome to call in 523-1450. I'll put you on hold. We'll take a little
okay.
break and come back.
All right.
You'll get a chance to go get your crib notes, you know?
I got all right. my crib notes in my brain. I never have to go
God bless
get them.
You. All right, hold on a second. We'll come back and we'll continue this debate. All right, folks, we're debating something that I wanted to get into for quite a while, which is this idea that sort of religion has to be separated from the state, which is ultimately on one level, you don't want the state church telling you what you can and can't believe. On this level, though, when you completely make religion illegal, there's no source of rules. And so then there's this chaotic, murderous thing that results. And so we'll take a break here and be back, 720 Kelly O'Connell. Can you hear me? Frankie, can you hear me? It's 723. Frankie, you there?
Yes, I am. I'm still here. I was
right.
listening to everything in the break and stuff. But let me pick up on something.
Go
you
ahead.
Know, and I think reinforces, you know, my thought process of the dangers of religion influencing it to the general secular political aspect. Take, for example, what's happening in Indiana or even North Carolina, where they've come up. Now, you could call it, you know, cultural thought processes, but that cultural goes back to the religion that's been forced or energized by the religious sect. The business about this LGBT stuff and then this Indiana thing, you know, where they blew up in their face. Those are the religious people throwing in their two cents to upset the apple cart because they refuse to do anything in advancing their thought process.
Well,
and this is
Frank,
what is the death and destruction of nations.
All right, here's my response to this: is you've got a group of people who become empowered in the country and in the political process, they've become more muscular and been able to establish their ideas and such. Then the Supreme Court goes in and makes gay marriage legal, as we remember recently. And there's a lot of people out there that now feel put on the spot because they don't believe in gay marriage. And just the same way that you're talking about a way of life and humanism and atheism and separating church and state, these people don't want the government to enforce beliefs on them that they cannot support. And so it's a true dilemma. So people are looking, trying to carve out room to live their lives. It's the same story as when we left England, the government telling us what we can and can't believe.
Well, okay, we have a big dilemma here then, don't we? I mean, if you're going to say everybody has their individual rights, well, whose individual rights are better than somebody else's individual
exactly.
rights? In this country, it's supposed to be each man, each person has their right, life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness.
Right.
So if somebody wants to be an LGBT person, that's their life,
but let
liberty,
me ask
pursuit.
You this.
The other person, you'll never come to an agreement.
Let me ask you this. You've got a company and a person comes up, your private company, and you're making cakes or whatever, and the person says, I want you to make me a cake for my marriage. My partner and I are married. You say, I would rather not to. Should the government come in and sue or allow this person to be sued because they're operating off their religious beliefs? I mean, you know, forcing a pastor to marry two gay people, that type of thing. Isn't that taking it way too far?
Well, again, in my personal thought process on this thing, if I was owner of a cake shop, I wouldn't. It wouldn't make any difference to me. I don't care. You want a cake? Because you know what? I need to make money. I need to keep my shop open, pay the government taxes. So how big do you want that cake? And I'm going to charge you this amount of money. No, I'm not going to throw you out the door. But by the same token, again, I'm going back to the point in the United States of America, individual rights, liberty, freedom, blah, blah, blah. If you can't find the person that wants to build your cake, place out.
Exactly. Exactly.
No, nobody does. Huh?
Exactly. It's exactly. But here's my problem. Instead of dealing with things by consensus and state by state, we used to believe in federalism, which was local rule on as many issues as possible. We've nationalized a lot of issues like abortion. The abortion debate has never been settled because it was sent to the Supreme Court and there was a law that was made there. So it wasn't worked out from state to state. These issues should be worked out state to state because one population is more or less liberal or religious or whatever than another one. Let it be dealt with locally at least.
Well, okay, you can argue that point, but then you have a federal government for a reason. One of the better thought process reasons is there's a uniformity. If everybody's going in a different direction, just like a rowboat, everybody going in a different direction, how are you going to get anywhere? You can't have it that way. There has to be limitations.
Of course you can have it. Well, there's got to be limitations, but our limitation is the Constitution.
What the Constitution, the 10th Amendment, states' rights or something like that.
Oh, so, yeah,
okay.
Yeah, but that's hold on. But let's get into states' rights just briefly. 10th Amendment says that any powers that are not already separated,
enumerated,
given out already, remain in the state. I mean, that's very powerful. And it's, you know, you've got to have some level of local rule to have a good community.
Yes and no on that. I mean, again, if it's a state, the way we're constructed, yet the United States, each state has its own way they want to do something. Tennessee versus New York versus whatever the heck it is. There's nothing wrong. That's the way the country was set up. But by the same token, if you're going to have a union, hello, the whole word union means like one, then you can't have everybody running off in different directions. As simple as that. Now, the Supreme Court, Roe versus Wade, or any other thing that the nine, or at that time, nine justices would rule on, they're looking at the Constitution to follow those particular the principles in the Bill of Rights and fairness and due process and all that stuff. So in that sense, if you're going to put the federal government over the states for the purposes of the union, then that state has to make the adjustments where they're off the deep end.
As everybody knows, let me just kind of, because I got to get off the air here and take a break.
Okay.
And we've got other people calling in. Here is my end-all, be-all statement. History shows us that although a lot of people claim that religion is the worst thing in history, I understand that that argument is out there. History proves to us that when you forcibly take away religion from a society, it makes the situation a billion times worse, because hundreds of millions of people have been sacrificed, have been murdered by governments. Only in that situation, only when you take away religion from society and totally separate it from society, do you end up with hell on earth. What's your response?
I disagree. If you take away religion and do not supplant it with something else, specifically superior, intelligent, logical, learned, liberal intellect, you only have what you say.
Okay.
There you go.
All right. Thanks a lot. Great call.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. Nature abhors a vacuum. So does politics. Here is continuing, and we do appreciate a good call like that from Frankie. Continuing. Salute to the county's new get a free car program. They're saving us money. Canned heat on the road again.
On the road again, I'm on the road again. But I'm so tired of crying, but I'm out on the road again. I'm on the road again. I ain't got no woman just to call my special friend.
All right, you're aware of the fact that they did a study of the county, the sheriff's office, and it was admitted that the guy that did it was a hired gun, a hatchet man, a hack, whatever. And even Ben Rossin came on yesterday and said that the county commission was embarrassing itself. Anyway, here's a take on that from Apocalypse Now. Colonel Kurtz washing his head, his face. What a great scene.
They say, why? Willard. Why they want to terminate?
Why do you want to terminate Kiki, Golden Earring, Wayne Hancock?
My command. I was sent on a classified mission, sir. No longer classified.
Marlon Brando here. Classic cinema.
What did they tell you? They told me that you had gone totally insane. And that your methods were unsound. Are my methods unsound? I don't see any method I expected someone like you. What did you expect? Are you an assassin? I'm a soldier. You're neither. You're an errand boy sent by grocery clerks to collect a bill.
That was Vice. He was an errand boy. He collected $48,000. All right, so you've got some protests happening at Trump rallies, and there's apparently a large protest that's taking place in California, and they're smashing cars, etc. Sounds like a continuation of the Occupy movement, and there's a Hispanic element to it. Now, and speaking of which, they say that the numbers of people coming over the border now are unprecedented, and the upshot is that it would appear that the president is trying to get as many illegal people into this country as possible. And I wonder if this country is going to live long enough, the society is going to make it long enough, to for someone to write the real history of Barack Obama, the crazy, absolutely crazy series of directions that he's tried to take this country in, the lack of leadership, the taking his hands off the wheel when it comes to the Middle East, just the repeated harmful decisions, and then this kind of the smug reaction. It's turned out that the economy in the United States has not grown 3% in the entire time that Obama's been in office, which is a sure sign of failure. And yet he's got all of his excuses. He saved us from the second Great Depression, etc. It's all very troubling. And it's very sad that we would accept this kind of abuse year after year. I mean, we must really hate ourselves to have a leader like that. Isn't it dreadful? And I do have a little bit on these protests, street protests, from CNN.
California Donald Trump rally last night, with hundreds of protesters taking to the streets, clashing with drivers, smashing windows, and attempting to roll over cars, facing off with Trump supporters. This fight leaving this Trump fan bloodied and bandaged. Police on horseback struggling to contain the demonstrators. We're gonna win, win, win! Inside, Donald Trump riling up a massive crowd.
Look at the size of this place.
Taking aim at his rivals.
Lion Ted Cruz. We know Lion Ted, right?
She's crooked as you could be.
Crooked. Hold on.
You ever see a guy eat like him?
And keeping his eye on next Tuesday's high-stakes primary in Indiana.
The big poll is going to be on Tuesday in Indiana.
Hold on just a second. I'll get you on. Hold on.
The state today with Bobby Knight, and I love Bobby Knight, and they love Bobby Knight, and let's see what happens.
Indiana's biggest paper blasting Trump on Thursday, calling the GOP frontrunner, quote, a danger to the United States and to the world.
All right, so big protests. There's a lot going on, and we do have a caller. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connor Show. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly, this is Robert.
Hey, Robert, I could barely hear you. You sound like you're in a well.
Yeah, we're going through a tunnel right now.
Oh, okay, all right.
I was just thinking, my friend,
I can't hear
you. Dedicate a song to Jess Williams.
Which is what?
Who's going to drive my car? Who's going to drive my car by the cars? Who's going to take me home tonight by the cars?
I played that yesterday. I can play it again, of course. Who's going to be taking Jess home tonight is the question.
I have no idea.
All right. Hey, I can barely hear you.
She's in a carpool.
I hope he's in a carpool, either that or he's getting a lot of exercise. Thanks for the call. Have a great day. Folks, we have the athletic director from NMSU here, and we'll be right back to talk to him. But we do have a request that we must honor here. And we've got to take care of these requests. Yeah, this guy that sang the song for the Cars, well, he did bite the big one. So a little too much, I think, rock and roll lifestyle for this guy. Benjamin Orr, he died of pancreatitis. But anyway, we've got the director of NMSU Athletics, I believe, in the studio, and we'll be back and talk about him or talk to him about athletics and what's going on over there. 7:43 on the button. Kelly O'Connell, 523, 1450 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. Dedication to Jess Williams.
Who's gonna tell you when it's too late? Who's gonna tell you things aren't so great? You can't go on thinking nothing's wrong. What now? Who's gonna drive you home tonight?
It's 7:47, flying the friendly skies, and we've got the director of athletics at NMSU, Mario Mocha, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Mario, good morning to you.
Good morning, and you are.
A lucky break there. Okay, so you've got a couple, there's a lot of things we could talk about. We could talk about politics, or we could talk about what's going on at NMSU.
Yeah, well, we have a lot of games, so if anybody wants to do a political rally there and bring some people out, I am all for it. Doesn't matter what side of the aisle you're on, we'll take you.
Can we burn some people in effigy or what?
Yeah, you know, we if we alert the authorities in advance, I'm sure we'll be okay with that.
All right, so how's it going at NMSU?
You know what? There's always a lot of work to do. Obviously, the big news is that we just named a new head men's basketball coach, Paul Weir, the 25th coach in the history of New Mexico State. First Canadian in the history of Division I basketball to be a head coach. So we're pleased at that. A longtime associate head coach of our former coach, Marvin Menzies, who left us to go to UNLV to be their head coach.
That's an amazing program over there. That shows what a great job you guys are doing, that your head coach would go someplace like that.
Well, it's certainly a national brand. They've won a national championship, you know, in the early 90s. Obviously, we used to have tremendous battles with them when we were both in the Big West Conference. So, yeah, it's exciting, you know, a new era. So we hope to obviously keep everything that's been good and kind of tweak some things and take us to new heights. But we're excited to enter into the Paul Weir era, and I know he's going to hit the ground running.
Any truth to the rumor he's a Cruz plant?
No, you know what? I don't know exactly what his, you know, being Canadian, I'd have to ask him about his political affiliation.
Does he call it a cylinder? Does he call it a hoop? Does he call it a wire?
I'm quite sure he would call it a basketball hoop. Yeah, I don't believe he would make any faux pas, at least on the basketball realm.
That's comforting. All right, so give us an overview of athletics and NMSU. What's your feeling? What does the future hold?
Well, you know what? We've got 17 sports, 425 student athletes. You know, they do very well in school. They do an enormous amount of community service hours, 6,500 and counting this year. Obviously,
I was going to say, hopefully not court directed.
Yeah, no. Just
kidding.
This is voluntarily. Voluntarily. They've been very good socially, which is always important to the athletic director and the chancellor for sure. But, you know, we're having another great year. We've won a bunch of WAC championships so far in Western Athletic Conference in volleyball, men's basketball regular season, women's regular season and tournament. Equestrian won the United Equestrian Conference Championship. And then let's see here, both men's tennis and women's tennis won. Women's golf just came off a championship.
So we've got a lot of success.
We're having a good year right now. Men's golf is competing for a championship up in Seattle. Softball's in first place. The last series of the year at UMKC, they're in second, just a game behind us. So that's a huge series starting today. And then baseball this weekend. We're only two games back of first place, and we play the first place team Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Well,
so, you know, it could be a huge weekend for us and more championship teams.
All right. So do you guys ever use boosters to, you know, volunteers, that type of thing?
We do. You know, the Aggie Athletic Club has, you know, over 750 members. They, you know, their financial support helps all the athletic programs evenly. So whether you're a men's basketball fan or, you know, you love golf or equestrian, you know, any of the finances go to help books, room, board, tuition, et cetera.
You have nutrition. A phone number for the boosters?
We do, 646-7630, and we can give anybody more information on our Aggie Athletic Club.
All right. Okay, so you've got some challenges. What do you think the upcoming basketball seasons are going to be looking like under the new coach? I mean, is any sense what's going on?
Well, we've got everybody returning. You know, we've got one big player, Pascal Siakam, our forward, who is a All-American, only the seventh in the history of our program. You know, he's going to be working out with some NBA teams. I know that when I was with Coach Weir yesterday, four NBA teams called. You know, you can set up private workouts.
Sure.
And as long as the student athlete doesn't secure an agent, he has the ability to come back. So the NBA does a really good job with giving you a feel of where you're going to land in the draft. So you don't get an agent and all of a sudden you're ineligible and then you're low in the second round or not drafted at all. And then you're sitting there and you don't have the ability to go back to school on a scholarship. So he's going to be testing the waters as well as Ian Baker, our starting guard. So we'll see what happens, and hopefully those two guys come back because they're an integral part of the team.
All right, so I got to ask a tough question. The football team has struggled in the past. Now, what is the future hold for us in football?
Well, you know, I think Doug Martin's got a great squad coming back. Larry Rose, who just finished his sophomore season, was a third-team AP All-American at the running back spot.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, he was the Sun Belt Conference Offensive Player of the Year. Set numerous rushing records. So we haven't had a AP All-American here since 1974-75.
And especially at the running back position, that has a big impact on games.
Pretty critical. So we've got a lot of people coming back on both sides of the ball. Have a new defensive coordinator from Boston College, Frank Spaziani, who's a tremendous talent from a coaching standpoint. So we're looking forward to it. And, you know, we're going to know right away because we open up at UTEP on September 3rd. And then we come home to play UNM on September 10th. So talk about two huge games right off the bat. We're going to know right away.
And we almost beat UTEP last year, as I recall.
Yeah, you know, the issue is, and a lot of people don't see this, you get 85 scholarships at our level. And through academic issues and different things like that, we had only been playing with less. We hadn't had a full complement of scholarships since 2008. So, you know, we go into that game with only 72 compared to 85, and those numbers make a difference at the end of the game. You know, we had a 14-point lead with 4 minutes and 6 seconds left in the ball game. We lose in overtime. We go up to UNM. We have a 15-point lead with 6 minutes and 8 seconds left in the third quarter. We drop that game. So I really feel that, you know, when we get our numbers up, and then we've got to solve our conference issue. You know, we're in the Sun Belt Conference for two more years, and then there's a little bit of a question mark of what's going to happen. So that's something that not just myself, but the president, Carruthers, as well as a whole committee, are looking
what
at
are some
solving
of the,
that.
What are some of the options?
You know, there's only really two options. The options of discontinuing football isn't on the table. So it's really, you know, going independent in football after these 2 years in the Sun Belt, or after these 2 years going into FCS, which is the 1AA moniker. So we're at 1A. You'd be dropping down to 1AA. If many of you look at the paper, you know, there was a big article at Idaho. Drop down to 1AA or FCS. That was the first program to do that since 1982. So there'll be some hard.
Is that the Vandals?
That's the Idaho Vandals. That is
and
correct.
They were extremely successful in the past, so why would they do that?
Well, you know, it's one of those things where that we're in the same boat with them. They're looking at not having a home in 2 years, and all of their sports, other than football, are already in the Big Sky. The Big Sky has 13 football-playing members, so they would be the 14th. So it made sense that the Big Sky would go after them really hard to kind of balance out their conference from a football standpoint.
Yeah.
And they're in the footprint, too.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So, well, we're running out of time here, but can we get you back on the show?
Yeah, I'd love to be back. And once again, you know, Saturday is our big baseball sellout game.
Is it here?
It's here. It's here. You know, last day to get $2 tickets. You can get those at the Pan Am box office. And with a political bent, you know, if we could have a Sanders and a Trump rally there, that would really help the crowd.
Well,
we'd
have to get somebody in a wheelchair to replicate Sanders, you know. So, I mean, electric wheelchair. So
we'll take any. We'll take whoever's run, you know, Cruz, Kasich, and Hillary. If we could have all five of them with all their crowds, you know, that would be satisfactory.
Maybe we can get Cruz's dad to come down and bless the team.
Well, I'm gonna stay right down the middle on that one.
Thanks, but no thanks. Yeah. Coach Mocha, thank you for coming on. It's great to have you on here, and good to know you're up a little bit on politics as well. But we'll have you back in the near future.
I appreciate it, and thanks for having me.
Absolutely. All right, folks, we're just kind of ending up the week here. And I wanted to remind you that Ted Cruz's dad said, "My son ran for president after God sent his wife a sign." Isn't that what we need? Another president whose wife tells him what to do? I mean, you know, God tells him what to do through his wife. Well, Ted Cruz decided to run for president. And this is from Mother Jones after God spoke to his wife, Heidi. And that's how Rafael Cruz, his papa and born again pastor, described his son's decision-making process. And so when the family sought God's guidance as to whether the senator should enter the presidential race, after 2 hours of praying and supplication, God sent a message to Heidi. And this is essentially the message, according to Papa Cruz, my son Ted and his family. I can't do a Cuban accent. Oh, actually, he would say my son Ted and his family spent 6 months in prayer seeking God's will for this decision. But the day the final green light came on, the whole family was together. It was a Sunday. We were all at his church, First Baptist Church in Houston, including his senior staff. After the church service, we all gathered at the pastor's office. We were on our knees for 2 hours seeking God's will. At the end of the time, a word came through his wife, Heidi, and the word just said, I want to move into that gosh darn White House. No, I'm sorry. Seek God's face, not God's hand. And I'll tell you, it was as if there was a cloud of the Holy Spirit filling that place. Some of us were weeping, and Ted just looked up and said, Lord, here I am. Use me. I surrender to you whatever you want. And he felt there was a green light to move forward. And apparently God wanted Ted to do a lot of fibbing along the way. Anyway, thanks for listening in. 7:58, coming up on 7:59. And it's been one heck of a week. I've still got whiplash from some of this, some of the stories we've covered. And so we'll end up this dedication to downtown Julia Brown's car acquisition habits can't go on forever. But here's the final one. Beatles, Baby, You Can Drive My Car. Have a great weekend. We'll see you back in 2 days. Ciao. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. Go support those NMSU athletes. And
she said, baby, can't you see? I want it, baby, just a star of the screen. You can do something in between. Baby, you can drive my car. If I'm gonna be a star, baby, you can drive my car. Baby, I love you. I told that girl that my process was good. She said, baby.